so much for joining us here on the Transportation and Logistics Clubhouse, powered by Atlanta Dispatch and Humblebee Enterprises. I'm excited to welcome back a very special guest. We have Brandon Wiseman of TruckSafe. And before we begin, I just wanted to tell people, I know some opportunities coming up in the Metro Atlanta area for experienced dump truck drivers and supervisors. If you know anyone that would benefit, have them email me at dispatch@atlantadispatch.org. And that also goes for Southeastern Port Work. Again, that's dispatch@atlantadispatch.org. We also have to pay homage to LeBron James, who you may have heard has become the all-time leading scorer in NBA history. He passed Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, who had 38,387 points amassed over a 21-year career as an NBA player. LeBron has done this in 20 seasons and also has the fourth most assists in NBA history. And just to put it out there, I used to really avoid that conversation. Every time I went to my wife's family's house, you know, that's a household of basketball coaches and just former players. You know, that was always the topic of discussion of, is it LeBron or Mike? And I guess you can say, objectively speaking, the stats are speaking for themselves. So congratulations to that brother. I pray that additionally, he and Bronny can be the first son and father duo in the NBA, because Bronny is graduating high school. So I think LeBron got about three more in him. So yeah, that's that. Brandon, are you a basketball fan? And if so, did you ever entertain any of those MJ versus LeBron, who's the best ever?
I'm a college basketball fan, not so much an NBA fan, but I always enjoyed watching Michael play. I'm from Indianapolis, so his rivalry with Reggie Miller was always something to watch.
Oh, awesome, awesome. Yeah, that's a lot of passion in those games back then.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, yes, sir, yes, sir. Well, look, man, thank you so much for joining us back here on the Transportation and Logistics Clubhouse. And, you know, as a refresher, we talked about this in our first session, but what is a safety rating and what's the difference between a safety rating and a safety score? Just to get that out there.
Yeah, neither of them are really all that precise of terms. A safety rating is more formally known as a safety fitness determination, or SFD. And that's opposed to a safety score, which is more formally known as a safety measurement system score, SMS, or CSA score. And so that CSA program is more recent in time than the safety rating, which we're going to be talking about tonight. Safety ratings, safety fitness determinations, have historically been the way that the FMCSA and its predecessors rate how motor carriers are doing from a compliance standpoint. That's traditionally how the agency has kept track of the compliance of the motor carriers that it regulates. But more recently, it has come out with its CSA program, which is a broader program that now encompasses not only safety ratings, but also the CSA scores that motor carriers have that are based more on roadside inspection data. So the safety ratings themselves, you can kind of think of it this way. Safety ratings only apply to motor carriers that have actually been audited by the DOT. Those are the only carriers in the country that have a safety rating. If you haven't gone through a full DOT audit, then you don't have a safety rating. You're just considered not rated. But you very likely have CSA scores based on your roadside inspection data. So that's really the difference between the two.
Okay, gotcha, gotcha. And look, I pulled a few different clauses from various broker carrier agreements just to show the variances in the language. And, you know, just if your brokerage, you're listening to this and you hear your verbiage, don't sue me. This is all for educational purposes, okay? Educational only. But this is the stuff that we want to talk about and how it impacts a carrier, a motor carrier, you know, the safety rating. So this is snippet number one, all right? I have three of these bad boys. It says, carrier shall maintain satisfactory U.S. DOT safety rating and is otherwise authorized to provide the proposed services. So in that is, you know, you have to attest to all these things that are in that broker carrier agreement. Mm-hmm. And this is saying, oh, carrier shall maintain satisfactory U.S. DOT safety rating. Okay. Yeah.
It's not as precise as you would like it. Because like I said at the start, you only get a safety rating if you've gone through a DOT audit, a full DOT audit. The reality is that I think upwards of 90% of the regulated motor carriers in the United States have not undergone a full DOT audit, and so they don't have a safety rating. So putting in your broker carrier contract that the carrier has to maintain a satisfactory safety rating is just not going to be applicable to most circumstances, most of the carriers that you're hiring. So poor drafting, in my opinion. I didn't draft that.
No, I feel it, man. I hear you. And look, we got two more. Here's number two. Carrier further represents and warrants that it does not have a conditional or unsatisfactory safety rating issued by the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration, USD, Department of Transportation. Carrier is obligated to notify said brokerage in writing immediately if the safety rating is changed to conditional or unsatisfactory. So
that's getting better.
It's getting better, definitely getting better. And let me just go ahead and say the last one so we can, have the full conversation. The last one starts by saying carrier shall endeavor to maintain a satisfactory U.S. DOT safety rating, but under no circumstances is carrier allowed to provide services under this contract if their safety rating falls to unsatisfactory. So basically, you know, it started by the first one saying, hey, you got to be satisfactory to work with us. Part two is saying, hey, you might be able to work for us, but if you have satisfactory and conditional, but if you have unsatisfactory, it's just not happening. You got to let us know if you're satisfactory and it's gone to either of the other two. And the last one says, hey, man, I understand how it's going. You know, just try to be satisfactory, but if you're unsatisfactory, just keep on pushing. Why is it so important that the brokerages have such verbiage in their broker carrier agreement, these days?
Yeah, and I think we may have hit on this last time we talked, but, brokers and shippers, frankly, have some skin in the game here. If they tender freight to you as a motor carrier and then you or your driver are involved in a catastrophic accident on the load that they had tendered to you. Because what we see more and more commonly these days are brokers and shippers being pulled into the highway accident litigation that stems from those accidents. And the plaintiffs, the injured plaintiffs or their families in those cases, are arguing that not only is the motor carrier and its driver liable for the damages that they suffered, but also the broker and the shipper had something to do with this. And the theory of liability that they claim in those cases is that the broker, we'll just take the broker example, the broker was negligent in its selection of the motor carrier in that case. In other words, the broker had a duty to use reasonable care when vetting the motor carriers that it was using. And by not carefully vetting the motor carriers that it is using, it was negligent. And that negligence then led to the damages that the plaintiff suffered. And we've seen that theory of liability gain some traction over the last several years. And so, like I said, brokers and shippers have some skin in the game here. There's real exposure to them if they don't do this correctly. So they have a real interest in making sure that the motor carriers they hire are safe. And safety ratings are one way, one metric that brokers and shippers can use to help them make a more informed decision of whether the carriers they hire are safe or not.
You know, I've experienced that, you know, as the owner of Atlanta Dispatch. I've been calling in on loads, and I can be, you know, we can bring up a load and the broker can say to me after they've gotten the MC that, hey, this particular customer has their own, you know, requirements. Like, mm-hmm. I could use you on a different load, but I couldn't use you on this one because this specific customer of theirs, requires a a certain amount of months age on the MC, or that safety rating be a certain thing. And just for the people who are dispatchers, independent dispatchers, and you are possibly considering taking on the challenge of dispatching a carrier with a conditional safety rating, just be advised that it is literally about 45 times your normal job. You know, whatever you are going to do for a normal carrier is about 45 times more harder, because it seems like only one out of maybe every 15 brokerages will allow you to run their freight if you have a conditional safety rating.
Yeah, I'd be surprised if it's that high, frankly.
Yeah.
Just because, like I said, the only... I think the numbers are only like 10% of motor carriers even have a safety rating, and the number is even lower for those that have a conditional safety rating. So you're looking at a very small percentage of the carrier population that has received a conditional rating, and we can get into this more, but essentially the conditional rating means that the DOT has come in, has audited that motor carrier, and has found systemic problems with their compliance program. So it should be a red flag to brokers, if you're dealing with a carrier that has a conditional rating. It at least warrants further attention, whether that be getting some assurances from the carrier that they fixed the problems that led to the conditional rating, something like that. Just because if you just put a conditionally rated carrier out there on the road to haul your customer's freight, and God forbid that driver gets involved in a bad accident, you're going to be called to task in that litigation for not doing your due diligence and allowing that carrier to operate, knowing that they had a conditional safety rating.
I agree 100%. And you know, I have this experience, guys, because I have taken on the challenge of dispatching a motor carrier that has a conditional safety rating, and it's tough out here for them. You know, they don't get just like Brandon was just saying, nowhere close to the amount of loads that they could be moving had they had a satisfactory or just a no rating at all. And, you know, I'm not even going to continue down that line, but he's right. There's nowhere close to the amount of available freight to a carrier that has a conditional safety rating. And, you know, I guess to the topic of today's conversation, you know, what are those steps of getting from a conditional safety rating back to satisfactory? How does one come back from the brink of death?
Yeah, there's a couple of ways. So the regulations, there's a specific part within the safety regulations that details the processes that are available to a motor carrier that's been tagged with something less than a satisfactory safety rating. So we're assuming now that the motor carrier has gone through a DOT compliance review, and because of the violations discovered in that review, they've got a downgraded safety rating. The two processes that are available to them are to either, number one, appeal that safety rating by filing a formal administrative appeal with the DOT. You do that in the case if you believe that the investigator messed up, they misapplied the law, or they didn't get their facts right. The motor carrier can file an administrative appeal, and then that kind of gets litigated up through the administrative process and ultimately decided by the FMCSA's headquarters in Washington, D.C. They appoint their chief safety officer to kind of review those appeals. And then if the chief safety officer agrees with you on your appeal, well, then maybe your conditional rating gets upgraded to something else. Or the other option, the other process that's available to you, that this one's much more common than the appeal, is to submit to the agency what's called a safety management plan, where essentially you are admitting to the violations that they discovered and that led to the downgraded rating. But you are essentially pleading for mercy from the DOT, arguing that you have corrected those issues in the meantime, and then you have to give them proof that you've corrected the issues. You file a safety management plan with the DOT, and then if they are feeling merciful, then maybe they accept your plan and then they upgrade you. Those are the two ways that your safety rating gets upgraded.
Okay, cool. And I think that Another way of saying a safety management plan is that corrective action plan.
It's called both things. So either a safety management plan or a corrective action plan.
Yeah, 100%. But, you know, that's the process, you guys. Especially if you're that dispatcher and you have no idea what to do. And, you know, you're calling on a load and they say, hey, they're conditional. Well, do you have the corrective action plan or do you have the safety management plan for that carrier? And if you don't know what that is, you don't know. So you don't have any options at that time. But how do you develop a corrective action plan? What are those steps? Is it all the same? Do you do it? You know, are all corrective action plan made equal? You know,
no, definitely not. So it is one of the services we do through our law firm and through our consulting company, TruckSafe. And I've submitted literally hundreds of them at this point. The trick with these is what I found over the years is that a lot of carriers try and build these on their own. They try and develop them on their own, and they just don't understand exactly what it is that the DOT is looking for. Here's what the DOT wants to see in a corrective action plan, and here's what I found is the most successful in getting your safety rating upgraded. You know, number one, you're going to have your report that was issued to you after your audit, and it's going to list out all of the violations that were discovered in that audit. The ones that are important for a safety rating are what are considered either acute or critical violations. These are the most serious types of violations that are discovered in the audit. The report is going to list out every violation, even the small minor violations, but it's those that have been deemed critical or acute. Those are the ones that impact your safety rating. And so those are the ones that you really have to focus on in your corrective action plan. Let me give you an example. This is a pretty common scenario. DOT comes in and audits your motor carrier operations, and they're looking at your hours of service compliance. I would say this is probably 7 times out of 10, the result of a downgraded safety rating is they've come in, looked at your driver logs, ELDs, or paper logs if you're still on them for whatever reason, and they find a significant percentage of log falsifications. Your drivers are falsifying their logs in one way or another, including things like improper personal conveyance use. That's a very common log falsification. And so the way that the safety rating methodology works is that if in that audit they find a 10% violation rate of log falsifications or more, so in other words, if they're looking at 100 driver logs and they find that 10 of them or more of them are falsified, well then that amounts to a critical level violation in the hours of service factor, and that will automatically lead to a conditional safety rating. That violation alone, those 10 falsified logs, in my example, would lead to a conditional rating. And so those are the types of violations, those critical and acute, that you have to really address in your corrective action plan. And it's not enough to just submit a plan that says, hey, we fixed that issue, you should believe us. It doesn't work like that. What I've found over the years is that the DOT is expecting you to submit extensive evidence of the steps you have taken to fix this issue, and not only fix it, but prevent it from reoccurring in the future. Only when you submit evidence of that variety to their satisfaction will they upgrade your safety rating. Will they even entertain that? And so, just to give you an example, sometimes carriers will have submitted their corrective action plan and then it gets denied, and then they come to me. I was doing one recently. The carrier had that issue. They had a log falsification issue. That was the only issue that caused the downgrade. And they had submitted a corrective action plan that kind of detailed, hey, we talked with these drivers and we, you know, kind of retrained them on the issue, and they submitted that as their corrective action plan. That got denied. And so what we did was we took it, 10 more steps. We went in there, did third-party training for all of the, not just those drivers that were cited in the audit, but for the entire company, including the owners of the company, including the safety managers of the company, to make sure they really understood the issues that were discovered in that audit. So we did all of that training. We had to provide evidence that that the carrier had disciplined the particular drivers that were cited in the audit. So we had all of the notes of the conversations that we had with all of those drivers. And then we had new policies related to hours of service that were rolled out to all of the drivers, and then got signed acknowledgments from all of the drivers. So all said, you know, the carrier had submitted a corrective action plan that was probably 3 pages long. I think when we were done, we ended up submitting an entire binder full of documents to the DOT, and that was the one that finally got them upgraded. So suffice it to say, it really needs to be a detailed corrective action plan, a well-thought-out corrective action plan that really digs into the issue and demonstrates that you are serious about the corrections and that it won't happen again.
Oh, man. I hear you there, brother. I hear you. And that was a very thorough response. See, that's why I had to have you back up here, my guy, because, you know, the people are going to definitely understand, you know, why it's so important in those steps to, you know, come back from the brink. You said that PC, personal conveyance, is a huge issue when it comes to ratings and, you know, them being downgraded. Can you speak more to that?
Yeah. In my experience, that's the most common culprit for a downgraded safety rating. Above everything else, that is the biggest issue I'm seeing nowadays, especially with ELDs. Because here's the thing to know. So when the DOT is doing an audit of a motor carrier, if it's a full audit, they are looking at 6 factors. The 6 factors, if I remember these off the top of my head, are general compliance, which is things like, do you have the right insurance, stuff like that. And then they're looking at the driver factor is the second factor. So in that driver factor, they're looking at your driver qualification files, and they're also looking at drug and alcohol testing. The third factor is the hours of service factor. The fourth factor is vehicle maintenance. The fifth factor is hazmat, if you haul it. And then the sixth factor is your accident rate. Of all of those factors, the only factor where the violations are double weighted, meaning they carry twice as much weight, it's the hours of service factor. And so what that practically means is that you cannot escape an audit with a satisfactory rating if they find one critical or one acute violation in the hours of service factor. You can stand to get some violations in the other factors and still make it out of there with a satisfactory rating, but if they find one critical or acute violation in hours of service, you're going to get a downgraded rating. And so that's why hours of service, in my view, if you don't have that under control, then you're really putting your fleet at risk. And so to get to your question, George, specifically, personal conveyance is causing problems because, like I said, they're looking for a 10% violation rate. And all it takes is, if they're looking at 100 days of driver logs, all it takes is 10 of them to be falsified to result in that critical level violation that will downgrade your rating. And so personal conveyance misuse is often the culprit for that 10% violation rate, because either drivers are deliberately misusing the status, or more often than not, drivers just don't have a good understanding, and frankly, the motor carriers don't have a good understanding about when personal conveyance is acceptable. And that's not necessarily their fault. I mean, the DOT hasn't done you any favors by changing their guidance on personal conveyance and by making it kind of muddy. And so it's what I consider the biggest gray area in the safety regulations currently. And so what motor carriers need to know is that it's leading to a lot of conditional ratings and audits. And so I'm always very cautious when I advise carriers on personal conveyance. I think at minimum, if you're even going to allow it, I know a lot of motor carriers that don't even allow it. And that works for them and it keeps them out of trouble. But I realize that's not the right solution for all motor carriers, especially those that have owner operators who are using their vehicles, you know, for personal, you know, commuting as well. But my advice to you is, if you are allowing your drivers to use personal conveyance, you at least have to keep close track of it, and you have to have a policy, in my view, that kind of puts some limitations on it. You'll see a lot of motor carriers will say, we allow personal conveyance, but only up to maybe like an hour's worth a day, or maybe up to 50 miles worth per day or something like that. And the point of that policy is to cut down on potential misuse of that status because of the consequences.
Gotcha. I hear you, brother. What do you say? Have you experienced any customers, any clients who came to you for your help, who kind of said, hey, man, I'm just the owner. these are the drivers that are, you know, messing up and, you know, having the EOD violations and, you know, they're doing this. I mean, what do you say to that type of owner?
No, so the regulations very clearly place the responsibility on the motor carrier itself for the actions of the drivers, even for owner operators. The regulations make it your problem as the motor carrier. So the DOT has no sympathy for that argument whatsoever. It is always going to be your responsibility to make sure any drivers operating under your DOT number are complying with the law.
You know, and that sounds about right to me, because, you know, without it falling back onto the motor carrier as a whole, that would completely flip, you know, all the entire industry as we know it.
Yeah, for sure.
It would. Okay. So when it comes to, let's just say, the drug and alcohol portion of, mm-hmm. you know, that audit, you said that you have to be able in that corrective action plans, you know, say what type of discipline you provide or you gave to the driver that was guilty or had the offense. Is there anything that, you know, you've seen where that driver stays on the team and, you know, it's okay? Or is the minimum result that driver being let go and now all these things being developed around it?
Well, it depends on the nature of the violation, obviously. There are going to be some violations that are so egregious that if you keep them on, it's going to be hard to convince the DOT that you're really serious about correcting the issues. Drug and alcohol violations are the perfect example. You know, number one, if they violate the drug and alcohol testing rules, then they're automatically disqualified from operating a commercial vehicle unless and until they complete that regulatory return to duty process. So if the DOT comes in and audits and finds that you're using a driver who has tested positive for drugs or alcohol, but they haven't completed that return to duty process, that's one of those acute violations. All it takes is one instance of that to potentially downgrade your safety rating. So I guess what I would say to that is it depends on the nature of the violation. There are certainly more minor violations. I would even consider like the misuse of the personal conveyance. I don't think the DOT expects you to terminate every driver who has engaged in that conduct. What they want to see, what the DOT wants to see when you submit a corrective action plan, is that you're serious about addressing those issues with the particularly the repeat offenders. So they're not so concerned, in my experience, with the one-off violations here or there. As long as you're talking with those drivers and making sure that they understand what they did wrong and that they agree to not do it again, what the DOT is more concerned with are the you know, the repeat offenders who left unchecked will continue to cause these problems. I mean, that's obviously what we don't want. So suffice it to say, DOT wants to see that you are serious about addressing these issues with your drivers.
Gotcha. And does it still have the same impact even if, let's just say, an inspection happened, roadside inspection or through a scale station, a weigh station, mm-hmm. You know, and one of the carriers or one of the drivers, rather, had to take a alcohol test or whatever, and they passed it. Does that still impact that carrier, the fact that the driver had to take a, you know, get tested in the first place?
Yeah, so keep in mind that, you know, something prompts a DOT audit. These audits are not random. So, you know, you think of the FMCSA, I think they've got like 1,000 employees across the country. But they are charged with regulating over 700,000 motor carriers in the country. So there's no possible way that they're going to be able to audit any significant number of motor carriers. So what that practically means is that they have to prioritize the worst motor carriers for audit. And there's a few ways that they prioritize motor carriers nowadays for audit. Number one is the CSA scores and what happens during roadside inspections. So to get to your point, Jory, you know, you still have to be concerned about what's happening on the day-to-day roadside inspection stuff, because if you have a driver who gets pulled over and gets violations during the roadside inspection, that's going to impact your CSA scores. That's going to drive up your scores. And then as your scores start to elevate, that's when you start to get on the prioritization list for an audit, and that's when the DOT eventually comes in and then potentially downgrades your safety rating. So, you know, just because you haven't been audited or you're not currently on the radar for an audit, that doesn't give me a whole lot of comfort, because I'm more concerned with, hey, how close are we to being audited? And that's largely driven by those kind of day-to-day violations in the CSA scores. The other contributing factors to an audit are driver complaints. So a lot of times those will trigger audits. So if you let go of a driver, if you terminate a driver, and they're mad at you for whatever reason, you know, sometimes it's pretty common. They'll go to the DOT and they'll submit a complaint. They'll say, hey, this carrier was making me do X, Y, and Z, violate my hours of service, stuff like that. And that often prompts an audit. So that's another way. And then obviously serious accidents, multiple fatality accidents will usually trigger an audit. So just keep that in mind.
Okay. So this entire conversation is surrounding safety of a motor carrier. But, you know, traditionally when I'm talking about a motor carrier, I'm talking about an MC holder, you know, someone mm-hmm. that has a motor carrier authority that's authorized to operate, you know, interstate. So going across state line, moving goods for monies. But the same thing happens for those who only have a US DOT number that are interstate, correct?
Yeah. So private carriers, you know, you think of like the Walmarts and the Coca-Colas of the world, you know, their primary business is not transportation, but they certainly have large fleets. And they're not for-hire motor carriers, so they don't have an MC number. They're transporting their own stuff. And so they're considered private motor carriers. So they still got a DOT number, and they're still subject to all of these same safety regulations as a traditional for-hire motor carrier. They still have CSA scores. They still get audited. They still get safety ratings. So from a safety regulation standpoint, there's really no distinction between private carriers and for-hire carriers. They're all subject to the same rule set.
Okay. Well, I appreciate you for that one. Look, man, I think that we have a solid understanding foundation on the steps of, you know, getting that bad boy overturned, or at least what mm-hmm. a carrier would. I feel like we've given the tools, you know, the resources. I mean, if the people wanted to reach out to you specifically for these services, how could they do that?
Yeah, just trucksafe.com is where you'll find all of our contact information. And I would say more importantly than that, as you know, Jory, one thing that we try and do over at TruckSafe is just push out a lot of educational content on stuff like this, like safety ratings and CSA scores and how to keep out of the crosshairs to begin with. Much better to be proactive about this stuff and avoid this situation altogether than obviously to find yourself in that situation and then, you know, everything's an emergency at that point. So if you just find us over at trucksafe.com or on our social media pages and LinkedIn, we're pretty active, Facebook, etc., you'll get access to all of our content that we're pushing out on this type of on these types of topics.
Okay, bet. Was there anything else that was pertaining to this subject that you wanted to say, or did you have any final, any closing remarks?
Yeah, I guess I would say one more thing, and it kind of goes along with that idea of being proactive. What I found over the years, and I think we may have discussed this on the last show, but being proactive on safety and compliance really goes a long way, and not enough motor carriers, in my opinion, do it. So when we're talking about safety ratings and DOT audits, one of the things that I don't think enough motor carriers do is to engage in like a mock DOT audit, where you kind of go through your files and you know because of going through that exercise of how you might fare if the DOT were to actually come in and do an audit. I think that is invaluable, in my opinion, to do those on some cadence, whether it be once every few years even, to just go through that exercise, even if you're doing it yourself, just periodically audit your own files, audit your driver files, audit your maintenance files, audit your hours of service records, just so you know how you would fare if the DOT knocks at the door. So you're not left to worry about what would happen if we get that knock on the door. So that's something to consider. Mock DOT audits. Again, you can do them yourself, but if you want a third party to help, that's certainly something we do through TruckSafe and through our law firm, Childress Law.
Okay, well, bet. I think that's a great idea that a lot of people might not think about up front. So I appreciate you mentioning that. Well, with that being said, I think that we are going to be closing this bad boy out. Again, I appreciate you so much for your time, brother. And for everybody that's been tuning in, I appreciate the support. Lastly, tune in on Mondays at 7:30 a.m. as we partner up with Freightwave Sonar Team. We speak these days with Rick, and Rick, he lets us know which markets to, where to position our trucks to take advantage of the market. Next week, we're also going to be having a conversation on Monday. So the Monday conversation is about opportunities. If you are in the non-emergency medical transportation space, or if you're interested in getting into it, we are going to be speaking with a major brand in that area who's looking to partner up with transportation partners, transportation providers in these various places in the United States. So come learn more about that. That will be an opportunity for you to get business. If that's, you know, what you guys do, is definitely a place for you to get additional business. So tune in Monday at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time to hear that. So again, brother Brandon, I appreciate you, and you have a blessed one.
Thanks, Jory. I appreciate it.
Thank you.